everyone. I am Paige Niedringhaus, and today we have Stephen Fabre, the co-founder and CEO of LiveBlocks, here to talk about React Components as a Service. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We are very excited to have you on. And you recently gave this talk at ReactConf in Paris, I believe?
That's right. That was on Friday 22nd. Yeah, I gave a talk about React Components as a Service and kind of went pretty deep into what that actually means. So happy to do this as well on this podcast.
Awesome. So let's get right into it. At the talk, you mentioned you started a blog about your favorite football team, Rodez, and how that actually led you into coding. So how did your passion for coding evolve from there, which eventually led you to working on design systems at Facebook and then co-founding LiveBlocks?
I come from a small town in the southwest of France called Rodez. That's where I grew up. And I'm a big fan of the local football team or soccer for the people that are listening to this in the US. And that's what got me into not only coding, but also design. I started building like a blog for the team. And that's how I learned like CSS, HTML. So that was the beginning. I was probably like 12 years old. After that, I studied computer science. I then ended up moving to Quebec in Canada to do an internship. Then moved to Sydney, Australia. When I moved to Sydney, I found a basketball team that I could play with. And basically during a game, I ended up dislocating my leg pretty bad. I remember the ambulance has to come through, put my leg back in place, went to the hospital, and I couldn't walk for like over a month. I couldn't work either because I couldn't walk. And I barely had any money and I had to figure out how to get over this. And I started posting an ad on a website called Gumtree to make websites and designs for people. And 3 weeks later, I was already making more money than I was at my waiter job. And I only realized at that point that what I love doing for fun, like creating designs, graphics, but also building websites, I could actually have a career in that space. And I ended up joining different startups through that because of the work I was doing and started a couple of startups. And I really built a passion for building those kind of tools where you create an interface and people use that thing to create something out of all of that product. I really enjoy that. And I had some designers on the team that didn't know how to code. And I was one of the only ones that could code. And so I started building. Every time we had to create like animations and stuff like that. So I ended up starting building this tool that enabled designers to take their Photoshop layers or the Sketch layers. Sketch was like this app to design UIs and stuff like that. And put them into this tool to create animations and extract the CSS automatically for that without having to code. Anyway, I ended up launching this product on Product Hunt. And the CEO of Envision reached out saying that he would love for me to work for Envision. And basically, I ended up joining Envision in 2016 to work on a tool called Envision Studio. And that was also a creative tool, like a tool that designers use to create apps and websites, but also animations and prototypes. And stayed there for 4.5 years. But that's basically what eventually led me to start LiveBlocks. Because as I worked on Envision Studio, which was a desktop-based, file-based application, Figma started to get a lot of market shares and was becoming very popular by the design community. And as a designer myself, I was like, oh, I felt like I wanted to use Figma as well. And a lot of people on the team as well wanted to use Figma. And so one of the things that Figma did really is that it wasn't file-based, it wasn't desktop-based. It was something that worked in the browser. And you could instantly share a URL with somebody and start collaborating together. And that really felt magical because historically, if you wanted to do something, you had always had to save a file, send it by email, and like back and forth that way. There's still a lot of industry that still work that way, by the way. And that felt quite broken. And so we had this project at Envision to convert Envision Studio from a desktop-based app to a browser-based, web-based collaborative app, where you had comments, where you could bring multiple people in that experience together. And it felt like you were exactly in the same space collaborating, like basically what you experience in Google Docs, Figma, and those kind of tools where it feels like you're together. And so I led design for that project to make that conversion. And it took like a full dedicated squad. I think we were like 7 to 8 people. It took us a year and a half to build the initial version to make that transition. And that was a bit frustrating to me because it felt like this is how everything should work, because the web was originally meant to be collaborative. And it was a bit frustrating to me that it took so long and it costed so much money to the business to actually pull that off. And with my co-founder, Guillaume, who was based in Montreal, we worked together at InVision. We really enjoyed working on some of those problems together. And that eventually led us to start LifeBlocks. LifeBlocks is the company that we officially started in March 2021. And we basically help companies create awesome collaborative experiences. So we provide the APIs and the infrastructure, as well as the React components to create Figma-like app, linear app-like apps, those kind of collaborative apps. We provide all those tools to make that very easy for developers. So that's basically the journey. Yeah.
It sounds fantastic. I mean, I've worked a little bit I'm a software engineer as well. So I've worked on WebSocket APIs, or I've worked on collaborative tools, and they're either really difficult to build because there is almost no infrastructure, or there hasn't been up until the last few years, to make it happen. It just doesn't feel very collaborative at all. It ends up feeling stilted and janky and just not a great experience where you're just going back and forth like you would if you were all in the room together. It sounds like LifeBlocks has come around at a time when we really need that kind of a push in that direction.
I hope so. Yeah, that's basically where we started the company. And yeah, we think it's heading in that direction. Like when our initial kind of assumption that we had was like, okay, we've seen that happen with like maybe 10 or 15 years ago when Google Docs came out and they started taking a lot of market shares from Microsoft off the Office suite. And then Microsoft had to spend like multiple years to do that internally and enable collaboration in their tools to be able to compete. And we've seen that again, most recently with Figma basically taking over the entire UI design kind of market, taking over Photoshop essentially and Sketch for those use cases. Very quickly, actually. That was quite impressive. And so the bet we wanted to make is that this is not a technology that's only helpful for creative tools, but this is also helpful for all kinds of industries. So this is one of the reasons we wanted to start LifeBlocks and create this company to enable that kind of experience on the web.
So at LifeBlocks, you are focusing on letting developers create those collaborative experiences, regardless of what industry they might actually be building products or websites for. So you just said a little bit of what inspired you to pursue this as you watched Figma take over, you watched Google Sheets and Google Docs take over. But what kind of unique challenges have you faced to build this? Because we've talked a little bit about how it was very difficult for me, at least, to wrap my head around it and get started in the past. But what other types of challenges did you face when you started to really deep dive on this?
Well, actually, when we made that transition at InVision, I didn't realize at the time I would start a company around this with my co-founder. We actually stumbled upon this and it clicked for us. We knew we wanted to work together. And so we experimented for about 6 to 9 months. And being a true creative tool fan, and I love building those creative tools, we actually started making a video/presentation tool. And obviously, we wanted to make it collaborative like Figma. And it's only when we started working on this for multiple months that we realized that we were spending literally like all of our time on the real time and the collaboration aspect of things and almost no time on the tooling itself. And that's basically when it clicked for us. We're like, damn, like it took us a year and a half, a full dedicated squad at InVision. And again, it's just the two of us now. And that's all we're doing right now. So surely there's something to be done. In terms of, so that's basically when it clicked for us. We felt like there was a need and there was a problem to be solved because we faced it ourselves twice. That's what really led us to do this. And the thing that I think is hard to do for this, there's a couple of things. Obviously, there's on the technical side. Scaling WebSocket can be very difficult. So that's one thing we're solving, like enabling the real-time aspect and being able to scale that to thousands and thousands of people. That's inherently hard to do with WebSocket. And the other thing that I think is difficult is also that collaboration can mean a lot of different things. And the multiplayer real-time aspect, when you work together almost like in a video game, that's only the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more you want to cover. And so there are things like comments, notifications, sharing, permissions. There's a lot of things that you have to glue together in order to get a cohesive collaborative experience, not just when you collaborate together, but across the board within the product. And that's what we're trying to do. Like, we're trying to provide all those tools and components to make that work very seamlessly together.
When you're describing LiveBlocks, you say that you provide the concept of React components as a service. Can you describe a little bit more? How does this approach benefit developers, particularly in terms of the speed and the flexibility in building these applications?
This is something we offer, but that's new at LiveBlocks. We only started offering React components, if I'm not mistaken, in October last year, or November maybe, about 6 months, something like that. This idea is not new. We're not the first one doing this. I think a company that does this really well is Clerk. It's the authentication platform, and they basically offer a set of React components that integrate both the front end and the back end seamlessly together. And that makes it very easy for developers, especially front end developers, to add a fully working feature that also has often a better design than if you were to do it yourself, because it takes care of all the edge cases. It looks at all the best patterns and try to combine those things together. So we started doing this at LiveBlocks for a commenting system. So what we did is that we looked at all the best kind of collaborative SaaS products that we see out there. So we look at Linear, we look at Figma, Google, and a bunch of others. And we try to identify the common patterns that all of those tools have and see if we can actually combine all those things into a React component or set of React components and hooks that front-end developers can quickly add to their app. And that's great because it makes it very easy and fast for companies to add a full commenting system that is working end-to-end, that includes things like mentions, reactions with emojis, but also that ties automatically to a notification in-app inbox or something like that that you have in your app. So the idea is to like ship those components and make it very easy for people to get the value quickly. And one thing that we do a little bit differently, I would say, at LiveBlock than what Clerk does, for instance, is that we try to ship that with like different levels of abstractions. And so the highest level of abstraction to integrate this is, okay, you put a thread hook, like use threads, and you list all the threads for your comments. And there's a thread component that you put in, and everything is working automatically. And the only way you style this is by tweaking some CSS variables. It's pretty good. You can get quite far with it, but there's a certain threshold at which you can't really customize anymore. People can then compose the UI themselves and even use their own components from their own design systems. And that is very similar to what the library called Radix does. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're probably familiar with Radix, Paige.
Yeah.
And I love this way of like setting up components because they are completely flexible. You compose them the way you want. And you can pass any kind of CSS properties to it, any classes. So you can use your own CSS framework, whether that is Tailwind or something else. And it's just going to work and you have pretty much full flexibility that way. So we think about it, it's like different levels of abstractions based on what you need. One is like really quick to get started. And then as you go deeper down the tree, and then you can enable any kind of customization on top of that if you want to.
That is super cool. And that seems like a great way to do it, because I can't tell you the amount of times we've started out with some component library and it works great. And then the designer says they want to do something that the component library doesn't support. And suddenly you're down a rabbit hole trying to force it to work.
I'm a designer at heart, and so I know the feeling, and I just like the idea of being able to control like exactly how the thing look and feel, because I think that's what great products have to do, right? If you build a great product, you have to have control over how things look and behave. And so that's what we're trying to enable as well at LiveBlocks, yeah.
So you talked about how you looked at popular component libraries and different companies that were doing it well, and reverse engineering the React components that you thought would be most beneficial to people who are using LiveBlocks. So how did you ensure that these components were both customizable but also easy to use?
That's a good question. So I think I explained this a little bit. For us, because we're so focused, our focus is enabling collaboration to make and that sort of stuff. We try to look at, okay, what if we look at all the best collaborative products out there, what do they all have in common? So it's basically how we did it. We started identifying like UI patterns. And once we had this, we basically had to decide, okay, what is standard enough that it deserves to be in the default opinionated component and what doesn't. So that's basically how we did it. And then we have the different levels of abstractions, as I said, based on if you want something that works like 99% of like how SaaS products do it, just use the default. If you want to customize, fine. You can still start with that, then decide to use the primitive components that we actually use in the default components as well, and go deeper down the tree to make it a bit more customizable. This is more in terms of like making things customizable from a UI standpoint, but there is also a little bit of the functionality itself that I didn't really talk much about in the talk, but there's also like where does a comment or a thread get left on? There's a lot of different ways to do this. Like for instance, in a Google Docs, you select a piece of text, right? You select some characters and you can leave an annotation right next to what you have selected. If you look at a tool like frame.io, it's like this tool to review video assets and films. You can actually leave a comment at a specific timestamp on a video. SoundCloud as well has this kind of feature where you listen to a podcast or something and you can leave a comment at a specific timestamp. So we try to think about like, how can we enable comments, but like in many different contexts. Another example is Figma. You can leave a comment at a specific XY coordinate, for instance, or on top of a layer. So we try to think about all those different contexts. And the way we enable this, for instance, is through metadata. So we have each thread can have a set of metadata, and that can be whatever you want. So as a developer, you have extreme flexibility there because you can say, okay, I want a comment to have, I want a thread to have a timestamp attached to it. And then you can use that in your UI to say, okay, I'm going to show a little avatar on top of that timestamp position, for instance. Or if you build like a canvas-based tool, you put that somewhere else on the XY coordinate based on that metadata that you've stored. I don't know if I did answer your question here.
It's very much start with the building blocks that you provide. And then as your use case or as your specific requirements diverge from what the building block has out of the box, then you start to go deeper into your own customizations.
Yeah, exactly. I think a company that does this well, I think they do ship some like React components, but Stripe is a good example. By default, you will use kind of the standard checkout page that they have, or they built like a new kind of hosted site where you can handle like billing and all that stuff. I forgot what that's called. But if you want, and if that's not enough for you, you can actually build your own UI and deploy direct components for that. And if you don't want to use their own components, you can actually use yours and just leverage the REST APIs to build whatever you want. Mm-hmm. We think about it in a very similar way.
So how did you decide that you were going to do React as opposed to web components or, I don't know, Angular or Svelte?
Yeah. So we actually looked quite a bit into web components. And I don't want to talk for the team, but I also think that we're small. Like we're 12 people right now at Lifeblox. And our strength is around the React ecosystem, Next.js. And I think when you start a company, it's important to be focused. And there's only so many things you can do. And we knew that with React, we could do that well. And there was a big enough market to start with. So that's one of the reasons we picked that. I believe there was also some technical reasons why we didn't go in the web components route. But yeah, I would have to bring somebody from the engineering team to dive deeper into this.
It makes perfect sense. React is a good framework to bet on. It's not going anywhere, that's for sure. So if I was in your shoes, I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah, and for people that don't use React, they can still use the REST APIs, and we have like different tools that if you want to do something that way, you can. So that's basically the approach we have.
It's a good compromise.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about something that you touched on in your talk, which was the color mixing scale and the CSS logical properties that you use in your components. I'd love to hear more about the techniques that you used to enhance and adapt your UI with these.
Yeah. So disclaimer, that wasn't my work. That was actually mostly Mark from the team, super talented design engineer. And I really discovered this as I was working on the talk. I went pretty deep into the code base, and we basically use a color mix CSS property to essentially, the value of this is that you can create, for the default components, for instance, we have several CSS variables that we give to people that they can easily update to fit and match their brand as best as they can. The accent color, you can only change it once, and basically there's 5 or 6 or maybe more different tints of that color that get generated through color mix. And that's pretty powerful because you can create different colors that are not transparent. There's no opacity to it. And so it enables us to build a system that's super cohesive and accessible. And the way Mark enabled this, I thought it was pretty nice, that is that we basically have CSS files, a color mix scale custom CSS property that we've created that then leverages post-CSS. Post-CSS calls a function that generates the proper color mix string for CSS at the end. And what's nice about this is that then we have 5, 6, maybe a bit more variables that we give to people. If they only edit those, everything else is going to automatically flow through from that. I would recommend looking at the GitHub repo if people have a chance. It's pretty cool how it works. Yeah.
That sounds awesome, because I know from my own experience finding and replacing, trying to make sure that the color, the new color, is reflected everywhere is a painful experience and almost never works on the first try.
Yes, exactly.
Very cool. So how do you approach internationalization and localization in LiveBlocks? Because that is, I know, something that a lot of designers and developers struggle with based on what country the user might be in or what language they might be speaking. So how do you make sure that works?
Yeah, so technically speaking, we have 2 main things here. So there's probably more, but the 2 main things are, we have different props that we can enable on the components for left to right or right to left. Things start floating from the right to the left. So that works for those kind of languages. And then for internationalization, we use the Entail API. And it's pretty powerful because you can actually do things like relative time format for memory, that is called. And you can basically pass, I want this date to be relative, right, in that case. And I want it short. So there's different lengths that you can use. And I want it in English. And so if you do that, it's going to tell you 1 min ago, right, for 1 minute ago. But then you can pass FR, right, for the language. So French, for instance, is going to say, il y a une min, il y a une minute. And so you can do that for every language, and that can actually listen to the default settings that the people have on their computers and use that. And so that's a good way, I think, to enable those kind of use cases, yeah.
It's nice that you're using actual APIs that are standardized as well. It's a lot less fiddly than if you were trying to use a particular library to help with that.
I always use those kind of libraries before, and yeah, they're pretty powerful. And I realized, like, through this project that now that there was like a proper standard API Intel that works really well. And so, yeah, we've been using that. Definitely recommend.
Nice. All right. So what can we expect from LiveBlocks in the future? Where are you? What are the next things that people can get to see to come out of this?
Yeah. So we mostly talked about the comments aspect in terms of React components as a service. We recently shipped LiveBlocks notifications, and that basically enable people to have notifications in their app. And so for that, we also have another set of React components as a service. So we have one that enable people to create like an in-app inbox that's like automatically synced to the commenting system that we provide, so that if somebody get mentioned in a comment, that will automatically appear in the in-app notification inbox. So that's one thing we're working on. There's a ton of things we want to do as well with like text editor use case and making it very easy for people to create Google Docs-like experience. That's already possible today, but we want to dive deeper into this. And yeah, there's a ton of other components that we're thinking about. So we're always looking at like when you don't have access to a document, like being able to request access, or if you want to share something with somebody, like often those UIs look very similar between different SaaS tools. So there are some challenges here to be solved, but I think those are some of the things we want to enable in the future for sure.
Well, Stephen, it's been great talking with you. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like to touch on?
I don't think so. I think that was a pretty deep conversation. It's hard to talk about code and like patterns. I think what I would recommend is like to look at all of that stuff is on GitHub. So if you're interested, I'd definitely look at this. Colin, the founder of Clerk, also had a great talk that you can find on YouTube. Definitely recommend looking at that as well. Where he talks about like React components being the new gold standard API. And so this is something I really believe in as well. And so for any founders or any people like creating dev tools, I think I would definitely look into this as well, for sure.
Okay. We can make sure to have that in the show notes. And where can people get in touch with you if they're interested in learning more about live blocks or talking more about React server components or anything else?
So my handle is Stephen Fabre. Stevenfabre. And also LiveBlocks. Like, feel free to follow us on Twitter or X, I should say. And we also have a Discord channel. Can be helpful. We're quite active there. And so that's also liveblocks.io/Discord. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you again for joining us on the podcast today. It's been great to talk with you.
Thank you, Paige. It was great talking to you. Appreciate it.